switch the engine of the vehicle off, just listen. And the more you listen, the more you learn, because you become aware of things that you were not as aware of, because you're watching stuff so carefully, but you're not listening to what the message is from the wild.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Hugh Coppin. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Hugh. One. He grew up in Zimbabwe, where his family had a 3,000-acre farm, and his lifelong passion for wildlife and nature was born in the African wilderness. He's a three-time CEO of companies in Canada, the UK, and the US, and that ignited a commitment to challenge people professionally and privately to be all that they can be. Today, he is a U.S.-based leadership consultant and coach to CEOs in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Asia, and Australia. And the third point is he's dedicated to inspiring hearts and minds. His company, Tasimba, meaning Together We Are Strong, immerses guests on unique safaris in his beloved homeland in Zimbabwe. He personally leads each curated safari experience, and he can't wait to introduce his two young Canadian granddaughters to the African wilderness. Hugh, I want to come along with you. Hugh Coppin, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks, George. It's great to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you and exploring your passion and wisdom about the African wilderness. And today we're looking at what we can learn from nature when it comes to human communication. Where are the lessons for us as people? Because, you know, if we go back to nature, we should find the basic principles that we have maybe forgotten. And when you look at nature, what do you see happening? How does nature communicate? What works for them? What works well?
Well, in the absence of speech, which we've managed to develop ever since we left that original birthplace of mankind, they have continued to use all sorts of communications that allow them, in fact, to be and to stay very well in touch with each other and with their emotions and with their intended actions. So they are very good, without the use of speech, at communicating their intended message.
And so if they're not using speech, now we know that, you know, lions roar and elephants, I don't know what you call that, trumpeting. Yeah. And hyenas we call it laughing. Other than those obvious ones, what other ways do they communicate most effectively? What are the strongest ways?
Well, it's interesting, George. In fact, vocalization, which you're talking about there, is not one of their primary communication methodologies. There are three really that exist for them. First is body language. And that exists in a number of different ways, but it is absolutely it's their fundamental communications methodology. The second is one that we've virtually completely lost track of or lost the ability, and that is a very acute sense of scent and smell. And that's a critically important one. And the third one, obviously, is one that, again, perhaps we've lost some of, and that is listening, learning from listening. Because for them, what they hear is a lot of what they need to know.
Now, I find an interesting analogy there that, and I think you're right, that we don't listen enough. We need to listen more just to each other. It's not even about listening. And perhaps that's one of the joys of when we immerse ourselves in nature, and whether it's a forest or a jungle, we hear sounds that we don't normally hear.
That's very true, George. And in fact, one of the things that we really work with our guests is that listening. Stop. Switch the engine of the vehicle off. Just listen. And the more you listen, the more you learn, because you become aware of things that you were not as aware of, because you're watching stuff so carefully, but you're not listening to what the message is from the wild. But so much of the listening, really, I mean, it is linked back to the body language part of the conversation, George. And so, I mean, if I can, I'd like to just talk a bit about some of those body language things, because they are so important. For example, with elephants or with other animals, the position of the head, raised tends to be more aggressive, lower tends to be more relaxed. Standing dead still and just absolutely motionless is body language, because that animal is now concentrating very much on what's happening next. What are you going to do next? Or what is someone else going to do next? Or is this dangerous? Do I need to react? Do I need to respond? And I'm watching to see or hear what's the next cue, because one of those things will either let me relax or else it will let me run. But one of those two things is what I would need to do. And then, you know, we talk about with elephants again. I mean, they are the great communicators of the bush. They really are, George. They have so many different ways in which they're telling you and giving you signals. For example, when they greet each other at a waterhole that they have of families that's not necessarily their own family, but they know each other, they will come up and they will actually intertwine their trunks, or they'll rest their trunks on the other one's tusks. And it's so touching, because it's like old friends getting together, and it's that's an elephant hug. Also, you can tell from an elephant, is it agitated or is it relaxed? One way, if the ears are held well out like that and dead still, that elephant is quite agitated, quite anxious, and may, in fact, find that the situation is not to its liking and may, in fact, do a muck charge. What you tend to do when that happens, you back off. When the ears are flapping, as they will do, then they're comfortable, because that's their blood cooling system. All their blood actually passes through their ears, and is how they keep their blood cool in the heat of the day. So ears are important. Tail. When an elephant's tail is just gradually swishing, it's not accomplishing much, because frankly, there's a lot of elephant and there's not a lot of tail, but it's just showing that it's at peace, it's relaxed, everything's fine. But when they're agitated, and if they're about to charge or anything like that, the tail will be held straight out, stiff as a ramrod. Another cue. So there are things like that. Or when you drive up to or stop by an elephant, and the first thing it does is shake its head, and you hear this flapping sound of the ears hitting the side of its head, that's a warning sign. I'm concerned about where you are. I'm just telling you. I'm just warning you. I'm a little bit anxious. Show me whether you're here just to sit here and be with me, or whether you're here under some less enjoyable mission. Those are some of the ways that I can think of with elephants in particular.
Now, so I'm looking for human analogies here. So now, of course, we don't have those ears that we can flap, but I suppose what you mentioned about people standing perfect, you know, the animal standing perfectly still and watching you, examining you. I suppose in human interaction, when you meet someone and all they do is just give you the stare, it's probably not friendly. It's a sign that, okay, this person is got ill intentions. Yeah. So that's probably I see an analogy right there. And if a person is relaxed, there's a little bit of movement, we can see that, oh, okay, they're comfortable with me. We can probably have a conversation. We can probably have a decent discussion here.
Yeah. I think that's very true. And that's exactly the analogy that I was pointing out, was that and you meet somebody for the first time, and sometimes people will hold themselves very stiffly because they're trying to size you up. They're trying to figure out, okay, where's this person? And in many cases, they're making their initial first moment of judgment, and they're stopping and they're not doing anything until they figured out, are you here as a friend, or are you here as a foe, or are you here as someone I really want to be with, or are you here in some other capacity? And so, yeah, that's standing very still. You know, it's almost a little bit like when we freeze as a human in a tight situation, and we we just get locked for a moment with our eyes on something, or just, and it's precisely that moment.
Now, I'm also wondering, in the animal kingdom, they recognize these signals, these body signals, for what they really mean. In the human kingdom, we don't always recognize these body signals for what they mean. We often misinterpret.
I think that's really the part that the point I'm trying to make, and that is there are so many body signals than body language that we use, sometimes inadvertently, but it's giving us, it's passing messages. And that's their way in the wild of communicating through those body languages. But we're not as good at reading it. Now, some of us have gotten better at it, but it's really a skill which I think more of us need to spend more time on, which is just learning from body language and seeing how someone is conducting themselves. How are they holding themselves? What's their body posture look like? Does it look like they are holding themselves confidently, or are they anxious, or are they aggressive, or are they very submissive? All of that's visible in body language to us, just as it is in the wild.
If we only pay attention.
Exactly. You know, there are examples that I can give you, George. But you know, there are simple things like when lions or baboons are grooming each other. That's a communication. That's part of, I trust you. You're part of my family, and this is a bonding moment. And so for them, that's again part of that communication. When painted dogs or African wild dogs, whatever you call them, when they have rested all day and they are ready to go out for a hunt, they have this wonderful, exuberant running around, greeting each other, nuzzling, playing with each other. And that, because what they're doing is rebuilding the team spirit, because we're going out on a hunt, we're all going together, and we're just showing each other right now that we all belong together. This is our team. We're going off to do our thing. That's so, I mean, we do, sports teams do that in the locker room all the time. Sales teams do it when they get a big pump up message from some sales motivator, and they all go out there, rah, rah, rah. It's the same thing. It's what nature's way of creating that type of bonding.
Now, there's an interesting message that I think needs to be clarified, or its survival depends on, and that's the message of we belong. We belong together. In other words, we're on the same side, and that is critical in the animal kingdom because it's life and death.
Yeah, very much so.
And so tell us some of the other ways that animals convey that we belong, even perhaps cross species.
Well, one of the ways that happens most commonly is when they're all out and the number of species may be out on the savanna and they're grazing or at the waterhole or whatever, and one other species gives an alarm call. And that could be a baboon barking, and it is very much like a dog's bark. Or in case it could be an impala ram coughing, which is the same sort of thing, a sharp sound like that. And you will see all of the animals will stop. And they will look directly towards where that sound came from. And so it is a multi-species communication. What people have learned is that with baboons in particular, their cough or their bark actually also specifies what the predator is. It's a different bark for a lion or for a leopard or for a hyena or for wild dogs. So they're communicating, I see a predator and it's this. That sets everyone then into an alertness, an awareness. Where is it? Is it a threat to me? What do I have to do about it? So that, you know, again, the intended message is, watch out, everybody, I've seen everything. And because they're all such good listeners, then they pick up that sound. There's links into listening, George, because most prey animals, by the way, stay quite quiet. There's no reason to make a noise because all that does is attract attention from somebody you don't want to attract their attention. So they are models of behaving very quietly and going about their business. There's one exception to that, actually, and I will tell you, and that's impala rams in the rutting season. And the rutting season is the mating season for about 3 weeks in the fall. And impala rams make a racket. They're constantly they're trying to chase other males off. what they actually do frequently is shorten their own lives considerably, because the lions just say, all I got to do is follow this, the racket that this Impala ram is making, and there's lunch. But for the most part, they are doing, they're listening. They are so good at that, that, and their bodies are so trained. You've seen Impala with, or kudus with great big ears, ears like trumpets, so that they can hear from huge distances. And in many cases, they can rotate their ears in different directions in order to pick up different sounds. So listening, again, gets to be part of that multi-species communication system that goes on in the wilderness.
Now, you mentioned vocalization and that some of the sounds are actually have specific meanings on what type of prey, and that crosses species. Are there mistakes in vocalization? Because we humans, most of our mistakes we make with what we say. And so do animals experience that kind of challenge as well?
We don't know, to be honest. We really don't know. But it seems that they have their methods of communication, which get to be quite clear. Let me give you an example. When the elephant families are between usually 10 and 15, sometimes more animals, and it's led by a matriarch, she'll generally be the oldest female. The family may consist of a couple of her sisters. It will consist of a number of her daughters, and then their juveniles and their calves. So there'll be maybe four generations in a typical family. She's the boss. And what will happen is they'll go to a water hole and they'll all be busy drinking or throwing water on themselves. And suddenly they will all move off in unison because she put out the word saying, okay, it's time to go. So they have a very sophisticated sub-oral for us communication method. We can hear some of what they say. We can hear their rumbles, and that's generally rumble of content or just letting each other know where they are. But 90% of what elephants are communicating, we don't hear. It is below our frequency of hearing. They can hear it both audibly, but interestingly, they've also learned that they can hear over far greater distances by stopping dead still and having 3 feet on the ground and 1 foot, just the tips of their toes touching the ground. And they're listening through the ground for communication, suboral communication coming from families and elephant herds as far as 10 kilometers away. So they don't mess with that. They've got their communications pretty well. We don't think that they make too many mistakes on that. But what we don't know at all yet, by any means, every day you go in the bush, you learn something new. And the people who are living there are constantly learning these things.
Now, that I find fascinating. So the elephant's hearing is beyond our hearing. And I'm guessing that it's probably beyond the hearing of the predators, some of the predators. So it's like as if the elephants have a secret communication channel that no one else can tap into.
Yeah, they do. And you know, for the most part, predators aren't going after elephants, number one, because they're just too big to bring down. But number two, what they may do is they may go after and try to separate a calf from its mother, or a juvenile from its mother, and because that's a more attackable feast. But yes, elephants have that method of communication, which allows them. I'll give you an example how well that can work. On very hot days in camp, there's a water hole right in front of camp. And on really hot days, elephants need a lot of water every day, 40 gallons a day per adult. So they will come to the water hole. Generally, they'll come in the morning and they'll come in the evening. But in a hot day, they'll also come again during the day in order just to top up. And we have sat in camp and watched for 2 hours a constant stream and a constant parade, it's called, of elephants coming to the water hole, family by family. And they are going, and the amazing part is that water hole can't handle 400 elephants at a time. And yet that's what we see in total. So they're communicating all the time about saying, we're coming to the water hole. So the ones who are already there know, drink up, move on, get out, because we've got this stream coming. But it's as if there's a gatekeeper way back there in the bush somewhere who's letting the families come through one at a time. Okay, your family is next, and then you will follow them. But they're doing it all themselves. They're doing it all themselves by their communication. And there's no dispute about it. And they're not pushing each other out of the way when they get there. They're moving on. So there's an enormous social awareness that they get through their communication and through their the sort of animals they are, that they are so respectful of each other's space and right to get the water, that it's their communication allows them to be very specific on how that works in a tight situation like that, when everybody needs water.
Respectful. I'm thinking an elephant's a huge beast. It can do what it's want when he, she wants, and yet they demonstrate respect.
Yeah.
Do other animals demonstrate respect within their species and to other species?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think that, for example, in a pride of lions, there's a mutual respect goes on between the male and the females, because they have a deal, and the deal is quite simple. The male will protect that pride and will protect the territory. So he will patrol the territory, and he will mark, scent mark. Here we go to scent again as a communication, but he will scent mark the territorial boundary. And his role is to keep them safe. Their role is to produce the cubs and to grow the cubs up and to feed the family. But there's a mutual respect. They don't drag him into every hunt, because he's big and he's slow and he's not as nearly as agile as they are. They drag him into a hunt when they need his extra bulk to bring down a buffalo, for example. But equally, you know, he doesn't invade on their space. He allows and respects their role in the family. And so it's this, there's actually a bond of, it's so human sometimes. You think, here's the females all together having a chat, the kids are playing around, and he's sitting off in the grass about 100 yards away, pondering the big issues of the world. Now tell me that's not human, George.
Very much so, yes. So Hugh, I'm thinking about what you said when the elephants greet each other, they hug with their trunks. And I'm thinking how that compares to how humans, when we meet each other, we might hug or shake hands. And my understanding of where the handshake originated was, at one point it was a way of, we showed another person that we don't have a weapon in our hand. We don't have a sword. We don't have a gun. You know, it's just got an empty hand here. So let's shake. We're friends. So I'm wondering, how do animals show to each other that they're not a threat? They don't have a weapon in their hand.
It's really interesting that you should ask it, because the only time that there's any really that kind of conflict is between males for breeding rights. So that's when you'll have that. And that is usually a matter of might is right. And so it's a matter of the biggest one wins. And what will happen is that using elephants again as an example, when the younger males at about 15 years old are actually kicked out of the herd, they don't stay with the females and the young. They're kicked out. So for the next 10 to 15 years, they're forming small bachelor herds and doing their thing, but they're growing. And it's only when they get to be 25 or so years can they start to challenge for mating rights with a bigger bull. Generally speaking, that can be the collision of titans, but that's when you will see that aggression. But generally speaking, in most of the other animals, when herds are combining, there's not an aggression. An example of that would be Cape buffalo. Now, Cape buffalo when there's plenty of good grazing and that, they'll spread out all over the savannah and in the forests, and they'll be busy grazing. As the season of the winter drought goes on, and it is 8 months of no rain, and the grazing gets tougher, they get into larger and larger herds, and the families just join up, and you'll have herds of 300 or 400, and they will all come to the waterhole together, because what they're doing is, rather than competing with each other, they are coming together for safety in numbers, because large herd there are, the less chance there is of lions taking any one of them out. So that's again where they come together for safety or for security, but they don't challenge each other within the species. There's not an aggressive response saying, no, this is our family, stay away. They are remarkably social about that. Most animals will accept others of the same species in the same situation. Does that answer your question?
It does. And I'm thinking, wow, we humans could sure learn a lot, some powerful lessons from that sense of community. You know, we're all in this together. Let's work together. Let's, you know, be safe. Hugh, you talk a little bit about Tasimba. You run tours, safari tours in Zimbabwe. Tell us, why might someone be interested in participating in one of those safaris? What will they get out of it? How will that change their life?
Well, people love to go on safari because they love to see animals. What we have done, because from my experience of spending so many years in the bush and in the wilderness, is we realize just how much there is for us to learn by going in on a deeper immersion. And so our purpose is to give people in 1 week a much deeper immersion into everything that's going on so that they will understand two things. First of all, they will understand the wisdom and the wonder of nature, how nature works everything out and keeps everything in balance. But secondly, they'll start to look at themselves and at us as a species and say, we can do better. We came from here. But are we still aligned with the purity and with the wonders of nature? Or are we using it and abusing it? So people come away after that deep immersion with a different lens through which they're looking at themselves and their own lives. And many people have come away saying, you know, I'm going to do more to preserve the wildlife spaces in my country or in my community, or I'm going to do more in supporting organizations that care about lions, or organizations that care about elephants, or whatever. So they come away with a sense of their own sense of revitalized purpose about, gosh, I learned so much, and I realized just how important it is to preserve nature and the wilderness and the wildlife and the spaces from which we came.
And the website to find out more about Tasimba is tasimba.com, and that's spelled T-A-S-I-M-B-A. And you will find that link to that site in the description below. Hugh, in wrapping up, if you could sit a person down with an elephant, and that elephant was to give them one, two, or three pieces of advice for us human beings to improve our communication skills, what might that elephant say?
What a great question, George. I mean, I think that elephant would say, be a better listener. Take your time on choosing what it is you want to do rather than reacting in some sort of random way. And finally, take a look at yourself and consider, what do you want to be and do for the rest of your life? Because look at me, I'm an elephant, and this is all I know, but I am content with it. I love it. I am absolutely at peace with my family, with my children around me. And so you don't need all of the things you may think you need to be happy, to be comfortable. You can make your own life. You can make your own happiness wherever you are. Just watch me. And I have sat with guests out in the open under a tree and just watched elephants coming right by within a matter of a few feet of us. And they just say, you're sitting there. I know you're there. I'm pretending I don't, but I know you're there. You're welcome. This is my space, but you're welcome. Just don't try to hurt me or my children.
Powerful message. My guest today is Hugh Coppin, reminding you the message from the African wilderness is the more you listen, the more you learn.
Absolutely. Thank you, George. That's it. You've got it.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.